Henry also said, pray harder for the rapture. All right. In our context, moving on here, Genesis 31, make sure you're in fellowship. In verses 22 through 25, we have the beginning of Laban pursuing Jacob. The departure in the previous verses pointed to Rachel stealing the household idols of her father, and then Laban's regard of Jacob stealing what those idols represented. And it points to the real issue at hand, and that is the hypocrisy of religious reversionism on both sides of the coin, whether it's Rachel in her act of stealing or Laban in his pursuit of religious reversionism in his own way and misjudging, etc., in regards to Jacob. Now we have the actual pursuit beginning. Verse 22, looking at the Hebrew here. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. While consecutive, then you had the hafal form of the imperfect verb, third masculine singer, nagad, N-A-G-A-D. Hafal is causative passive in the Hebrew. So you would literally translate it, when it was caused to be made known. So someone had to take the initiative to tell Laban. Here, to Laban, told, it was told to Laban, preposition lamed followed the proper noun, Laban. This on the third day, you had the preposition bet, B-E-T, followed with the definite article, and our noun for day, common masculine singer, absolute, yom, Y-O-M. The third one, definite article, then the adjective, masculine singer, absolute, Shelishi, S-H-E-L-I-Y-S-H-I-Y, Shelishi, that he had fled Jacob. Conjunction key, that, K-I-Y. Our verb flee here is the cow, perfect third masculine singer, Barak, B-A-R-A-C-H, proper noun, Jacob. Verse 23, then he, Laban, took his kinsman with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey. While consecutive, then our verb to take, cal, imperfect, third masculine singular, lakach, L-A-Q-A-C-H. Sign of direct object, kinsman, literally brothers, common masculine plural, constructed third masculine singular suffix, ach. A-C-H. With him is the preposition M with the third masculine singular suffix, I-M. And pursued him. While consecutive, then our verb to pursue or follow after is your cow imperfect third masculine singular, radaph, R-A-D-A-P-H. Pursued, literally afterwards, is a preposition with the third feminine singular suffix, acere, A-C-H-E-R-E-Y. And he pursued him afterwards, literally, distance of 7 days' journey. Our noun journey here is a common both singular construct, Derek, literally a road. Or way, P-E-R-E-K, roadway, path, here of 7 days. First, you had the adjective seven, masculine singular construct, Shiva, S-H-E-B-A. Followed with our, again, our noun for days, Yom, Y-O-M, common masculine plural absolute. And he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. Wow, consecutive. Then you have the verb translated overtook here is the hiphil, causative, imperfect third masculine singular, dabak, D-A-B-A-Q. Literally means caused to cling. He caused to get close to is the best translation probably. Caused to catch, get close to. Sign a direct object with the third masculine singular suffix him being Jacob, E-T-H. In the hill country of Gilead, preposition bet, followed with the common masculine singular noun, construct har, hill country, mountainous region. Gilead, definite article with the proper noun. Verse 24. And God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night and said to him, wow, consecutive. And our verb to come is the cow and perfect third masculine singular, bo, B-O. That being God, common masculine plural absolute noun, Elohim, E-L-O-H-I-Y-M. To Laban, preposition L. E-L, proper noun Laban, followed with the proper noun with the definite article, Aramean, noting his race. In the dream of the night, you have the preposition bet, in, followed with our noun for dream with the definite article, common masculine singular construct, shalom, shalom, C-H-A-L-O-M. Dream of the night, during the night time, definite article, then our noun, common masculine singular absolute, the Yela, L-A-Y-E-L-A-H, said to him, while consecutive, our verb to say, Amar, A-M-A-R, cow perfect, imperfect third masculine singular, to him, preposition Laman with the third masculine singular suffix. His words, be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad. Be careful is your Nifal verb, imperative masculine singular, Shamar, S-H-A-M-A-R, to guard, keep watch, hence be careful. For you, literally preposition lama with the second masculine singular suffix. Then you have the conjunction pen, P-E-N, lest, or that not. Then our word to speak here is a P-L, imperfect second masculine singular, debar, E-A-B-A-R. In the matter of, with Jacob, preposition in, again, I am, follow proper noun, Jacob. And then in the Hebrew, from good until evil or bad. You have the preposition men, M-I-N, follow with the noun, common masculine singular absolute, tov, our word for good, T-O-B. Until, preposition ad, A-D. And then bad, is adjective, masculine singular, absolute, raw, R-A. Verse 25, and Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country. You had a wow consecutive. Then our verb here, caught up, is the hiphil, imperfect third masculine singular, nasag. N-A-S-A-G. First overtook, translated overtook in verse 23 is dabag. Here is nasag, caught up. Follow the proper noun, Laban, sign of direct object, to whom he caught up is proper noun, Jacob. In wow conjunction, Jacob repeated, proper noun. And then our word, pitched his tent, cow, perfect third masculine singular, taka, T-A-Q-A, means literally to strike and blow, translated pitched, sign a direct object, Follow with the common masculine singular noun construct with the third masculine singular suffix or word for tent, ohel, O-H-O-H-E-L. In the hill country, preposition bet, definite article, and then our noun har, repeated, H-A-R, common masculine singular, absolute. And Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Wow conjunction, proper noun Laban. Then our verb takah again, utilize again, to strike, T-A-Q-A, cal perfect third masculine singular. Here, camped is how they translate it, pitched camp. With his kinsmen, sign the direct object, and then our noun for brothers, common masculine plural absolute with third masculine singular suffix, ok. In the hill country, same construction preposition bet, followed with the noun har, here of Gilead, definite article with a proper noun. All right. Rereading the verses. When it is told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, verse 23, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him, 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. And God, verse 24, came to Laban the Aramean in the dream of the night and said to him, be on guard that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad. Verse 25, and Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Now this is verses 22 through 25. One, Jacob was on his third day, our phrase Yom Shilishi in the Hebrew. Jacob was on his third day of travels when news of his exit from Padan Aram reached Laban's ears. So he got a 3-day head start. So two, the hafal form of the verb, it was told, nagad in the Hebrew, is causative passive, meaning that Laban only found out through others. They had to go out. Others that not mentioned figured out what happened, and they had to go tell Laban. So three, this suggests that Laban was still out and about, engaged in sheep shearing when others located him and told him of the news. Otherwise, if he returned home, he would have found out on his own. So four, Laban springs into action, calling in the help of his kinsmen, his brothers, Ach in the Hebrew, to form a search party to go and hunt Jacob down. Five, that Laban had access to other relatives in the immediate vicinity to come to his aid explains Jacob's concern of defending his family. That is, he would be greatly outnumbered. Again, while fear is part of his motivation of not saying anything in his departure, the biggest issue at hand was his inability compared to what Laban, his uncle, was able to scrounge up in regards to a military unit, if he so became that aggressive, to overpower Jacob. And here we see how that is possible, even though Jacob may have had several servants on his own. Laban had the advantage of his relatives being in that geographical location. It's like living out in the hills of Virginia or someplace today, you know, all your relatives. And you have your big feuds, you get all your relatives one on one side, one on the other, and duke it out. Well, here Laban has the advantage of calling in all of his relatives that would have been around for years, which could have been very many. So Jacob, to validate our earlier interpretation of reason to leave covertly to gain as much advantage as possible was because of his uncle's ability to scrounge up, as I stated, others to help him in the case of becoming aggressive towards Jacob. So, again, point five, that Laban had access to other relatives in the immediate vicinity to come to his aid explains Jacob's concern of defending his family, i.e., he would be greatly outnumbered. Six, this gives a strategic sense, then, to why Jacob, quote, set his face toward the hill country of Gilead, end quote, in verse 21. As it ended that verse, he fled with all that he had, he rose across the Euphrates River, and set his face towards the hill of Gilead. That was for tactical reasons. And here we're given the reason, given the clue as to what he's thinking. So seven, he was booking it, hooking it, leaving, Didi Mowing, whatever you want to call it. He was booking it for terrain that would provide added advantage for natural defense in the event of attack. If he's going to be outnumbered, obviously being out in open country, they'd just run him over. But if you put yourself in a terrain that has a natural defense built in, such as hilly country, somewhere where one could implement guerrilla warfare easily in that regards, etc., then obviously that's going to be a tactical advantage for a smaller group paramilitary situation. So now we know why he headed for hill country immediately. That's where he set his face. I got to get there as fast as possible. And basically he gets there. So, eight, it was in the very vicinity of Gilead that Laban and company then gained a visual on Jacob's band after they pursued him 7 days' journey. Radoph, Akare, Derek, Sheba, Yom. So, they come to the vicinity of Gilead. And the first encounter, if you will, is made essentially, he made visual contact. Really, it would have been better translated reversing the English, what they had 23 and 25. 23, the final phrase, and he overtook him in the hill country again. That would have been better rendered, and they caught up with him in the hill country. And then verse 25, caught up would have been better rendered overtook, because he then actually makes physical contact with him. So that's your two. You have two advantage points of Laban coming in contact. First, the visual, getting close to him right there. Both parties see each other. And then the next day, he will come in and he will meet him face to face. He overtakes him. So we'll straighten out the New American Standard eventually. So Jacob had 3 days head start. Laban is able to conjure up the his troop to go after him. And it takes 7 days before he gets within the visual. By that point in time, Jacob has reached at least the edge of the hill country that he was determined to get to by this time. So nine, this means 10 days of travel by Jacob had by then transpired. So Jacob, it would have been full 10 days for him to get there. What he covered in 10 days, Laban and company covers in seven. So ten, the distance from the Euphrates to the edge of the hill country of Gilead, which is north up by the Sea of Galilee, and back east, northeast. It's estimated some 350 miles as the crow flies. 11, this means that in 10 days of travel for Jacob, they kept a 35 to 40 mile a day pace for the entire entourage, which is exceptional but not impossible. It looks to me like they were pushing 12, 14 hour days, easy, with that large of a livestock, etc., that they had to move. For Laban and company, they covered the same distance, averaging around 50 miles per day over 7 days, which would not be impossible with camels or horses in that respect. So they pushed hard in both cases. 13, with Jacob in his sights, verse 24, then reveals the intentions of Laban once he directly encountered Jacob. So verse 23, he has Jacob in his sights. Verse 24 then exposes that Laban had malintent in regards to his confrontation with Jacob. He was ready to go in and kick ass by force, take over Jacob and his wives and his family, etc. Otherwise, why the dream? Why the warning? So verse 24 reveals the intentions of Laban once he directly encountered Jacob. 14, in a dream on the night before confronting Jacob, which we know that in verse 29, as Laban says to Jacob there, it is my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night. So in a dream on the night before confronting Jacob, God appeared to Laban, warning him, be careful that you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad. Shamar, Lamed, Pin, Dabar, M. Jacob, Min, Tov, Ad, Ra. 15, the admonition, the command, the negative command, do not speak either good or bad, means Laban is not to seek to influence Jacob in any way by means either of a favorable enticement or threat from the opposite end of the coin that would deter Jacob returning home. That would in any way seek to influence Jacob for not fulfilling the divine directive to go back to Canaan and to go home to his relatives. So, this is the restriction that God placed upon Laban. Whatever else you want to say is fine. But you got to be careful. You better watch yourself if you try to get in there and try to influence Jacob one way or the other in regards to not fulfilling the divine directive I've given him, basically. Obviously, it doesn't record that God told Laban that he gave him divine directive. God just gives him the warning. That's all he needs to hear. He's negative. What good is doctrine going to do to him? See. So again, the admonition, do not speak either good or bad, means Laban is not to seek to influence Jacob in any way by means either of a favorable enticement, speaking good, or threat that would speaking bad, that would deter Jacob returning home. 16, it was thus Laban's intent to get Jacob to return to Haran by force if necessary. He came out not to have a party with him. He came out to get what he considered to be his gods, his belongings. Some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth later on, he just goes, how can even an idiot believer come up with some of this stuff? But, you know, that's the way it is when you're running under your emotions and you're rejecting doctrine, some of the stupidity that will come out of our mouths. And again, all this reveals the hypocrisy that the religious philosophy that Laban lives by. And just how double standard it is. Though left unspoken, the intent of the warning on Laban's part was for him to consider that in the event of disobedience to God, he put his own life at stake. Obviously, be on guard or be careful that. That's a threat. That's a threat by God. He's getting ready to threaten, if you will, if he has to, Jacob. So God turns around and he threatens Laban. And obviously, Laban's hand is in the life of God. And all these little things that we've picked up on going through here. Laban's a believer. He acknowledges Yahweh earlier on in his divination spiel. See, so it's a mixture of the true faith with pagan idolatry that Laban's involved in. And now God appears to him. You say, well, why would God appear to a reversionistic believer? It's all blessing by association. The fact that he referred to as the Aramaean here twice, if you look back, that's the title that's given to his father, Bethuel, the Aramaean, as well as himself. It shows the family lineage, and his father at least had the common sense to, you know, to do what was right in the terms of in regards to Rebekah and Abraham's servant, etc. In that respect, so you know, do right by your children growing up. It may produce a further future blessing by association that you're not even aware of. So it can go both directions. So, though it's left unspoken, obviously the intent carries with it a threat that God mess you up really bad if he doesn't kill you. So, 18, a sense of humor by God, or by the interpreter, however you want to look at it, a sense of humor by God seems to exist as this real-life, quote, inspiration, end quote, is set in contrast to Laban's supposed divine disclosure received earlier back in chapter 30, verse 27. Again, when he is talking to Jacob, I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. Well, that was just lip service as he was steeped in idolatry. And he is suggesting a divine inspiration. Well, now he has a real one. God shows up at the door. But it's not quite as he first made it out to be, as some great insight in regards to the situation at hand and how good God's been and all these other things. No, it's God saying, I'll kill you. You do this, basically. See? It's a warning. It's a terrifying thing that fall in the hands of the living God. So you can't, at least I couldn't pass up this contrast. You wanna throw my name out? You wanna use my name in conjunction with your religious reversionism? I'll show up at your doorstep. Not unlike, you know, as we see in regards to what happened to Saul when he called up the medium. Yeah, I want to talk to the dead. You're going to die, boy. You know? So 19, Laban wanted to tout his ability of communicating with God, and now that it really happens, it obviously is disconcerting, to say the least. What kind of dream is that? But this doesn't slow this guy down, man. He's constantly thinking. This is one thing that I've picked up. This guy's constantly thinking, trying to figure out a way to get around a situation of which he has his own agenda, his own goal. And there seems to be stumbling blocks. That's what you see out there in the business world. You know. But anyway. 20, Laban realizes he is treading on thin ice here. 21, apart from avoiding the attempts to, quote, sway, end quote, Jacob back to Haran, Laban was free to say and do whatever he wished, as the subsequent narrative makes apparent. And it's quite intriguing, if that's the word to use, to see Laban in action in this respect, when you, especially knowing ahead of time how he's working for me. He thinks he can one-up God. He thinks he can work around this command not to do this and cost him his life and still get his way. That's your religious reversionist. See? Well, I can work my way around this doctrine and still be blessed. See? Whatever. So 22, now verse 25, advances the scene, placing Laban on Jacob's doorstep. And Laban caught up with Jacob. That's our verb nasag. Wow, nasag, Laban, Jacob. 23, both companies of men are seen to have dug in, set for confrontation. The choice of verb translated pitched and camped respectively is our word takah. And it has a sense of preparing to attack if necessary. 26, its most frequent use is in connection with the blowing of trumpets, which could mean signaling attack. Example, Judges 3:27. 'Came about when he had arrived that he blew the trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim. The sons of Israel went down with him from the hill country and he was in front of them. And he said to them, pursue them, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands. Verse 28. So they went down after him and seized the fords of Jordan opposite Moab. Again, attack. The charge of the trumpet. Like the old cavalry used to do. So, the word to call literally means to strike a blow. So that gives you a sense of aggression. And then you have it used in a military way, a signaling an attack. 27, the other term for pitching a tent is the verb nathah. We saw it used already in Genesis 12, 8, 26, 25. That's your more campy term of pitching a tent rather than military. As Abraham proceeded, Abram proceeded from there to the mountain of the east of Bethel and pitched his tent. That's the term nathah, 26:25. And he built an altar there, Isaac, and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. There Isaac's servants dug a well. We'll see it in 33:19. Jacob settles in Shechem. He bought the piece of land where he had pitched his tent in the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father. And then again in 35:21. Then Israel, that's Jacob, journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. So the word used here is unique, if you will, to a military flavor. Hence, they have camped confronting, ready to confront one another in a military posture. So 28, verse 25, recognizes that both parties were prepared for violence if necessary. Even though, obviously, Jacob may be outnumbered, doesn't mean that he won't fight if he has to. 29, however, divine intervention diffused the one party that would have ignited a fight. So, once again, we see that God has Paul's volition covered. There's no need to fear. He's doing what he thinks he needs to be doing otherwise. And we'll try to pick back up on this, let you out a little early, when we resume a week from Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.